Hi, this is Emily with your Politics in Action report at CJMQ 88.9 FM, updating you on the latest and emerging political news. Quebec Minister Sébastien Proulx has released his own novel as of yesterday. As Minister of Education, Proulx's book details his vision for the future of education. Among the visions he discusses in his novel, Proulx discusses the idea of fabricating a professional college of teachers. The purpose of set organization would be to establish standards of practice as a means of protecting the population. The release has prompted a swift response from educators who want the book banished from shelves and from becoming reading material. President of the Federation of the Teachers Union stated that teachers have not been consulted during the writing of this novel. So, what does he know kind of sentiment. As such, the opposition feels that Proulx does not have the best interests of teachers at heart. In context, the manner by which we go about understanding a given segment of the population is by listening to the learned experience of others. To announce that you comprehend the struggles and the necessities of a given group without consultation can therefore come off as an insult. So in other words, a lack in depth of understanding. This also comes off as a slap in the face for teachers in Quebec in particular. Due to teachers' protests that had taken place in 2015 with proposed funding cuts to public schools. So teachers have been through much turmoil, to say the least, and they feel Proulx does not understand their struggles, and writing a novel doesn't make that any different. Montreal school bus drivers are protesting today in concerns over increasing their wages. Approximately 330 drivers from the bus company Transco. The drivers are demanding to acquire a raise of 2% per year for the next 3 years. Drivers of the Transco company currently earn $20,000 annually. With that salary, bus drivers are living paycheck to paycheck, and with inflation, it becomes increasingly difficult to support oneself in society, and not working during the summer has its effects. The bus drivers transport approximately 15,000 students across 4 school boards. Therefore, protesting is really going to make an impact, and people involved with the school board will definitely take notice. This protest follows a recent bus protest held in Sherbrooke some weeks ago, which demonstrates the issue touches on various regions within Quebec. The hope is that their demands will be heard, and I expect they will. More developments of the strike will be covered at a later date. With constant appeals to reform our current electoral system, it is no wonder the Black Quebecois are fighting to survive in federal politics. This does prompt to question, is the Black Quebecois on its last leg? Recently, it has been announced that 7 of the Bloc's members have left the party to sit as independents. Their reasoning was a lack of dialogue and progress made within the party, which incentivized them to sit as independents in the House of Commons. Some speculation was that Bloc leader Maxime Ouellette is too controlling. Ouellette has denied said allegations. As such, the party is divided, with half supporting Ouellette and half calling her an authoritarian. While party leaders still uphold values of Quebec sovereignty, their depart came down to differences in strategies. The problem arises with the party's diminishing support at the federal level. The problem with a French center party competing at the federal level is its lack of broad support. Under the theory of brokerage politics, federal parties will attempt to broaden their support to accumulate the majority of votes. Single-issue parties, which is sometimes what the Bloc is considered by alternative voters, have difficulty competing at the federal level for the reason they focus on one fragment and one area of the electorate. With that, English Canadians see no reason to vote for a party that doesn't represent their specific interests and would consider it a wasted vote. It is evident that French Canadians are a minority in Canada. While they are a majority in the province of Quebec, they remain not well represented in the remainder part of Canada. As such, Bloc voters are based in Quebec, and they are the only hope for the Bloc's survival. The problem is that there's a conflict of interest in the sense that French Canadians need to be represented at the federal level. At the same time, the party is not the strongest at the federal level and must compete with the Liberals, Conservatives, and the NDP for Quebec voters. As an official bilingual country, it is relevant to preserve the interests of French Canadians, who constitute 23% of the population. This is with reason the Bloc emerged as a federal party in the first place. But over the years, the Bloc Québécois has gradually been accumulating less support. The NDP is partly responsible, as evidenced in the 2011 Orange Crush, where NDP won significant voters in Quebec. So federal competitors are contributing to this shifting in voter behavior, and this is especially true in Quebec. As such, it can be hard to organize the party when the direction and the future of the party is uncertain. This is made evident with what is occurring inside the party itself. But a fallout inside the party can only mean one thing. Its instability will make the party vulnerable in the next federal election. Can you believe the first time you heard news headlines stating the possibility of Russian interference in the US election? It is now a headline deja vu, as now Canadian headlines warn of the possibility of Russian interference in the next 2019 federal election. This comes from a NATO researcher who explains the possibility of a Russian interference as incentivized by destabilizing a military alliance of the US. Alternative reasons for Russian interference include undermining Canadian foreign policy in Europe. In essence, Russia might have bad blood with Canada, so to speak, in terms of Canadian NATO forces presently in Latvia as part of an anti-Moscow deterrence in an Eastern European mission. To explain this, because there is more to this matter, in 2014, Russia seized Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula out of threats of NATO expansion. Since then, a permanent NATO communications headquarters was established in Latvia as purpose to combat Russian misinformation during the annexation of Crimea. As does any NATO ally, Canada is supporting its NATO allies in preventing the spread of Russian coercion and propaganda. This has brought NATO parties to the Eastern European front lines to ward off Russian expansionism. This is essentially a fight over territorial expansion and hence power. Let's not forget that the US and Russia were the dominant and rival powers during the Cold War. So there will still be hard feelings, to say the least, because there is still the element present of mistrust in the Russian Federation. The basic rule of thumb is that if your opponent is seizing territory, anything that may pose a threat to yourself, then you do the same thing in response by augmenting your territorial capacity. The basic example is with military arms. When a state such as North Korea augments its military arms, then opponents like the US will do the same. The main idea is that they won't attack me because if they do, then I'll fire back and then we both get hurt. So in essence, both parties come off as strong and militarily capable that no one will attack out of threats of counterattacks, hence deterrence. People may ask, why is Canada involved? Simply because Canada is a part of NATO, and as an ally, it is the duty of allies to support one another in times of need. Russia has publicly threatened to some form of retaliation against Canada, which Russia did not specify, partly due to the anti-corruption legislation passed in honor of the Russian whistleblower Sergei Magnitsky. For those who do not know, Sergei Magnitsky was a former lawyer at a Moscow law firm who discovered Russian tax fraud as committed by Russian tax officials and police officers. After making this information public, Sergei was arrested and mysteriously died in custody. With Canadians supporting a traitor like Sergei, definitely developed some bad blood between the two nations. You could also see that Russia is outwardly opposing any bad word of mouth that has been opinionized against Russian leader Vladimir Putin. This is why Russia has banned the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Chrystia Freeland, from entering the country, as her former career as a journalist and writing articles allegedly negative about Putin. This feeds into Russia propaganda, whereby no one is entitled to write or speak about Putin in any derogatory manner. This has prompted the government to call on the Democratic Institutions Minister, Karina Gold, to prevent this from occurring by strengthening protection against foreign interference or hacking. In MicroStrategies, this will take the form of greater transparency, so political parties can account for their fundraising and media companies, as well as to outwardly report any issues with foreign interference on their servers. So why does the threat of Russian interference in the Canadian election so derogatory? It comes down to trust people have in their government, which establishes legitimacy. With technological advances making things more digitalized, governments always bear the risk of international hacking. If we cannot have free and fair elections without interference, then this hinders the democratic process and we lose the trust and confidence in people. This is worrisome, and in the era of fake news, no one knows what to believe anymore. We are becoming the age where we no longer trust our governments, and the outcome of elections for that matter. This is part of the reason the Canadian government is looking to generate greater transparency in order to regain the trust of Canadians. There is still much ambiguity whether or not Russia hacked the US election. This is the problem with censorship of information. For example, citizens will never know whether the assassination of John F. Kennedy was an operation fabricated by the FBI. Had the full documents been released on the JFK file, there would have been a different story and we would understand what really happened. So when we hear headlines warn of Russian interference in Canadian elections, do we believe it or not? At least we can be thankful that our government is preventing such a thing if it were to occur from happening. Finance Minister Bill Morneau has increasingly been making headlines these days in terms of presenting the federal budget. Yesterday marked the third presentation of the federal budget since the Liberals came into power. Federal budgets are a manner for the government to present to Canadians how they are spending funds. This is relevant because, like when citizens file for income taxes, it is a way for the government to account for its expenditures. It is increasingly important because citizens can see what the government is doing with their tax money, essentially. This is part of what open and honest government is about. Within this budget will be included investments towards science and innovation, promoting gender equality, and ameliorating living conditions for Indigenous people in Canada. Typically, budgets will present a new funding initiative. The main and overarching theme with this budget is gender equality. In greater depth, in terms of gender equality, the federal government intends on supporting initiatives that encourage women to participate in the workforce. This trails on the story I discussed the other day in regards to the federal budget's use it or lose it parental leave for second parents to have paid time off when their baby is born. Adding women to the workforce is also the Liberals' approach to dealing with productivity challenges of Canada's aging population. Finally, Liberal spending is to be dedicated to ensuring equality of wages in federal workplaces. Depending on government investments and the amount thereof, the Canadian government can either expect to have a budget surplus, spending less than what is earned, a budget deficit, spending more than what is earned, and a balanced budget where spending equals earnings, which is what the Liberal government had promised coming into government in 2015. What the release of this federal budget demonstrates is a budget deficit, with estimates of an $18.1 billion deficit for the 2018-2019 year. Critics have argued that as the economy is performing relatively well, any investments are only purposed to appear as though the Liberal government are superheroes, and this would play well within the upcoming 2019 federal election. There have been predictions that the government will be unable to balance the budget by the expected time of 2019. Last fall, the fiscal update projected a deficit of $19.9 billion for the 2017-2018 year. Conservatives have taken this opportunity to argue and criticize the Liberal government for overspending. Leader Andrew Scheer was quick to point out that the Liberals initially promised to allocate funds on infrastructure and grow the economy. Jagmeet Singh basically states the Liberals took the NDP's idea of universal pharmacare, which they had previously motioned for in Parliament, but the government had voted against. This is a habitual and normal part of the opposition parties to call out the government in power for spending too much in areas they deem not a top priority, and which areas the government should have allocated funds to, and so on. It's no question with the numerous initiatives the Liberal government want to pass that this would cost money and acquire much federal spending. With accomplishments comes spending. This was the Liberal government's objective coming into government. With that comes the difficulty of balancing the budget as they initially promised. There is always an opportunity cost. To spend more means acquiring more services. Spending less on federal initiatives means more money reserved, generating either a balanced or a budget surplus. This decision ultimately comes down to the government in power. Within the same discussion of the federal budget, the budget will also subsidize free park admittance for youth under the age of 17. This fulfills the Liberals' promise in 2017 to make this initiative possible. Last year, for Canada's 150th celebration, all national parks were free for everyone, as issued with the Discovery Pass. Having free admittance for anyone, especially youth, incentivizes the frequency of visits. For example, schools will likely take field trips to national parks, as it would be cost-efficient and a learning experience. As well with this incentive, the government can expect families to take their children to visit national parks, therefore benefit from the profit of the parents' admittance. Of course, with any initiative comes some opposition. Opposers view this incentive to visit national parks as harmful for the preservation of our national parks. With greater crowds means trampling on the territory and the greater probability of trash. While there have been some drawbacks of attracting crowds to natural areas, it is an opportunity for Canadians to learn about the various national parks Canada has to offer. I think that this is a great way to increase tourism. Not only will Canadians likely conduct more trips at home, but will also attract tourists from abroad. One of the main pull factors is the fact that they already have half their costs of visiting the area covered. The rest of the costs of camping and accommodations on site will not be covered under the new federal budget. Nonetheless, this initiative serves the benefit of granting people the opportunity to appreciate Canada's natural beauty. That is it for this session of Politics in Action. Until then, take care. I'm Emily at CJMQ 88.9 FM.